Good morning. Welcome to Art Matters. Art Matters is brought to you by the Alaska Arts Confluence, aiming to inspire a culture of collaboration by supporting artists and the arts for residents and visitors of the Chilkat Valley on Main Street in Haines and online at alaskaartsconfluence.org. And just like to say, the following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the board of directors and staff of Lynn Canal Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. Welcome to Art Matters. We have Heather, Lendy, Robin Grace, and Tim Shields all in the studio today.
How you doing, Marley?
I'm doing great. How's everyone here?
We're good. We've got it's almost like the last hurrah of the summer, this big first Friday of August.
Oh,
August,
yeah,
already. I mean, we just got out of the fair and yeah. We're kind of like prone. And now we've got a rally again for Friday night. And it's overflowing. Literally, there's artists, writers, performers, people to meet, and sidewalk chalk art and more. There's a lot going on. Also, this first Friday, Wayne Price and other carvers are going to be working on a totem at the Silver Cloud Studios up in Fort Seward before it's shipped to Juneau for installation. And it's a commission to bring awareness to the trauma of domestic abuse. So that's happening up on the porch there at the Silver Cloud in front of the big canoes. And there's also a doubleheader with Daniel Henry signing his latest book, new book, at the Pilot Light, and Lee Stetson, who's a John Muir impersonator. And he's doing a show Saturday night, but will be on hand at the Sheldon Museum Friday. And also might stop in and surprise Dan with his spirit, I guess.
Yep, so right. That'll be funny.
And then, gosh, just a quick runaround of what's happening at all the different participating venues. The Alpenglow will be opening their garden terrace, and they're the ones who are sponsoring the Flash Sidewalk Chalk Art Contest with the Rusty Compass. And then, of course, Dan will be there, and Brian Starseth, the wildlife photographer, right, is at the Rusty Compass. The Port Chilkoot Distillery features the lovely Merrick Bocart, and
excellent,
talented Merrick Bocart, I think her big latest public art is the mural at the American Legion.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Merrick will be at the distillery. And Lynn View Mercantile is going to have Leslie Evenden's Double Shovel Farm, a green market, flash green,
right,
market, from 5:30 to 8. And so it's located conveniently next to the other green shop right there. So
the new green shop.
So you can check out that as well. Art on
sequence?
Main Street. Yuko Hayes is going to be exhibiting her first year at Studio Incommonati. Incommonati. Drawings and studies at Ampersand. Playing hands, cards, tricks, and parlor games. If you took a card last time, I hope you brought it back.
Oh yeah, I did.
Okay.
I had a lot of fun with that.
Because that's what they're doing at the Magpie. Nora Priscindaro will be playing the guitar. Matilda Rogers will be singing. Of course, they were in the Southeast Got Talent show, two wonderfully talented young women. And at the Sheldon Museum, John Hagen's photography exhibit opened last week, but it's entitled Wild Things, and also the John Muir impersonator.
Right, so you can meet Lee Stetson and go check out John's photography.
And then up at Second Nature, the local nature store there, Mark Causey and Julie Causey's shop, are earrings and necklaces by artist Craig Ansel. And let me see, what else did I get here particularly? Oh, the La Loft.
Right, yeah.
In the old LAB building now, that's been revitalized, is having a dollar sidewalk sale. So you can decorate yourself artfully with clothing.
How can you squeeze all that into 2 hours?
You can't, and I think what you have to do, there's going to have to be some sort of a guide about which way you pick and choose.
Oh, yeah.
To go to different,
I think it's
different
great
things and move around. And you just have to decide sort of, do you want to get a little bit of everything or a longer thing of some and less of others? And I think it's nice because there's plenty of room for everybody and all different talents and interests. And that makes it a lot of fun. A rising tide
floats
all boats.
It is a very cool phenomenon in this town.
Yes. So let's get... Oh, also, on this show, of course, we have Tim Shields and Robin Grace, two local artists who are going to talk about their collaboration at the Haines Brewery. And then also we have Cassie Miller and Ari Marcourt, who will be signing their brand new children's book at the Babbling Bookstore in Haines, and they'll talk about that collaboration of art and words. So that's the second half of the program. But to get started, what I'd like to do is have you two introduce yourselves, even though people may think they know you. Robin, why don't you start first? And however you would like to be introduced for the Art Matters audience.
Let's see. I have been knitting for decades. And when I began living in Haines, like so many other people, the environment just affected me intensely, the bay, and I began to realize that I didn't need any more knitted garments, and neither did all the people I knew who I kept giving them to. And so I just stood out there and just began knitting and abstractly into the wind, basically, and that turned into a lamp. My torso was part of it. Well, and I've been knitting abstract pieces ever since. That was, I don't know, about 7 years ago. And last summer, after a show that I did at the museum, or preparing for the show in the museum, I think there was a show at the Arts Confluence, Tim and I got together and we just began to go on and on about our love for lichens, and thought we would do a show together. And so here we are, this collaboration that has just been an ongoing process, very much guided by passion and intuition. That's what I want to say at this moment.
Okay, and Tim?
I'm either an artist who does biology or a biologist who does art, but my art, my aesthetic reaction is to nature, and this project we're working on gave me the opportunity and the excuse to stare really closely at some organisms I'd never paid any real attention to. I mean, I knew of the existence of lichens, but once we decided on that theme, I spent 9 months in the Southwest, and there are pretty incredible creatures, lichens, all over the desert in very strange places, and photographs of those. That was basically my artwork over the winter, was to take these photographs, and then between Robin and me, the pieces have kind of ping-ponged back and forth. And the beauty of this show for me personally is that all of these pieces surprised me repeatedly, and the things that have emerged from our collaboration are complete. I couldn't possibly have done these alone. She couldn't possibly have done these alone. I caught that phrase, a culture of collaboration. This is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, ongoing. And a wonderful thing also has been that Tim would come over and look at some piece that I was working on, and then he'd say, I want to take that home. And I had no anxiety about him taking the piece and doing whatever evolved from his creative point and bringing it back. And this kept happening. So the pieces kept changing as one of us owned the piece temporarily, brought it back, and rediscovered.
So the collaboration then began with Tim photographing lichen in the desert primarily.
Primarily in the desert.
And with Robin knitting pieces inspired by those photographs?
Primarily, yeah. And Tim would email me the photos, or he would email me, right, photos that he had taken, and I'd say, oh my God, I need that one, send it immediately. And he'd have it printed, and then I would mount it on foam core board, and then I would start cutting into it. Here's an example of
and then
the lichen then is sent, then Tim takes a look at what you've knitted, and like what we're looking at right now looks like metal and rock. It's like a rusted metal.
Right, so it's a rusted piece
edge,
of
and it's
sheet
big.
Metal.
It's like a foot square, and then it has
The nice like rusty jagged bits around the corners that almost
and then
looks
what looks like the rock, like a
yeah,
a
could
slate
be,
or rock.
But it's actually a photograph of Tim's lichens. Of lichens.
Right. That's oh, it been is. Yeah, that black and white is a photograph.
Yeah, yeah. Black and white, the shiny.
See,
kind of
I
shiny
wouldn't
part.
Even have
it's
been able to
the yellow,
tell that.
So the yellow is the knitted.
Yeah, the yellow, I began to see. So what happens is I look at these photographs and I go into a zone. I begin to regard them as paintings. And then I think, oh, wow, that piece needs to come forward. And so then I will build these 2- and 3-dimensional knitted pieces and glue them or pull them through the photo. And sometimes cut up the photo, as you can see here.
Right. So the photo itself is like multi-layered as well. And the pieces of the fabric are different colors knitted. They look so much
they
like
lichen. They look like lichen. So knitted instead of pulling up a piece of lichen and sticking it on there.
So you go from a two-dimensional image, and then Robin pulls out certain features that become three-dimensional images. But then we didn't stick to the we didn't color within the line, so we just cut these photos up. A lot of them are sliced into bits, and the bits are distributed around. But this is one example, but the variation between the pieces in the show is really kind of astounding to me, how different these things came out, because this is one treatment, but it completely reacts to the lichen photo and the chunk of metal. And I think Robin provided that hunk of metal. So there's weird bits of junk, mostly from the desert, cut up photos of lichens, and surrealist knitting. And I don't know what genre that falls into.
Well, you know, I have to say that when I participate in these pieces, I'm not thinking of, oh, I'm going to bring forth a gold lichen. I get into an emotional zone. You know, I crank up some whatever, Jimi Hendrix or Bob Dylan, and I work to bring out maybe the color, but the materials are so sensual that I just get into this play mode, and a lot of it is about connection. I want to connect the photo, the real lichen, and my mood. That's what I have to say.
Yeah, you've rendered that lichen immaculately with the knitting. It's pretty incredible. And I'm excited to see the rest of the pieces and see how
there's some wild stuff. I'll tell you, there's some really wild stuff. And again, it's unpremeditated. That's also what I've really enjoyed about this, is that I would see some spectacular flash of lichen. And this, in terms of color, this is actually one of the dullest pieces.
Right.
In
it's terms mostly of color. Black and white.
Black,
and white.
Well, there's
yellow.
A lot of gold and yellow.
Exactly.
It's flashy to me.
No,
yes.
It's beautiful. But wait till you see the really multicolored ones.
Yeah.
And so I got to go hunting in the desert and find these incredible splashes of color. It's like Jackson Pollock done right. I mean, Jackson Pollock was fine, and he splashed his paint around. This is nature, you know, blowing doors on Jackson Pollock.
So here's a question I have with the title collaboration hints at this, and Robin as alluded to it as well. But you know, Tim, you do a bunch of work, you work on your photograph, and Robin has her little pieces that or big pieces that she's knitted that go along with this, and then you said they go back and forth. I mean, were there any times when you were like, no, that's not what I wanted it to look like? I mean, did you? How was the emotional collaboration here? Because, you know, as artists, we tend to hold on to our aesthetic or our vision for a piece. And if you worked on it that long and that hard, from searching in the desert to knitting these intricate pieces, and then you see they were stuck on wrong, or the photograph was cut up in a different way, did you ever just go, hold it, that's not what I wanted?
I love it.
You know, it's so interesting.
The answer is no.
No. Yeah, yeah. No, I think the other day I had a piece of wood, and I considered putting it on one of the pieces, and Tim said, nah, and that was okay. But it's been astounding, even when we named the pieces.
Yeah.
We were standing in our timber frame where I work, and we were going through each piece, and we were sharing names, and we agreed. Some names, you know, had were more hot than others. And at one point, we were naming a group. It's an installation of three pieces plus the photo. And we just cracked up and fell over on each other laughing, because it was, you know, what the names that came out of us matched so well. Okay, I'll tell you the name of the piece. It's called Three Sisters, and there are three parts. And one of the names is Goldie, The other is Violet, which was the name Tim gave, and Rose. And those three names kind of sound like they come out of the 1940s. And there's something about each of these pieces, to me anyway, that have that sense of women wearing gowns or just being in a certain place in a 1940s Groucho Marx dance movie. Somehow.
And this is lichen. And
it all came out of lichens.
And Tim, you're a biologist, so can you help those of us that might not quite have remembered our school biology and what exactly is a lichen? I always thought they were in wetter climates, and your lichen is mainly inspired by the desert.
I will do that, but I want to respond to your question about questioning the decisions of my collaborator. There were maybe two moments where I thought I wouldn't have done that, but then I suspended the judgment and then took them home and looked at them, and in every case I agree. And it's also inherent in this collaboration that you just trust the other person and you accept whatever they've done and go on from that point.
And you relinquish that ego about
exactly.
it. Exactly. And that's a big part of collaboration. You have to give
up
a lot of that ego that.
You have to give up the territoriality.
Yeah, and there's another interesting thing. Tim will, of course, tell you the biology of the lichens, but myself, as a psychotherapist, you know, I'm always thinking about how we're impacting one another. And it's so interesting, our subject, lichens, I'm sure they impact one another. They live in these incredible colonies, and that's something that was really exciting to me also. So it doesn't surprise me that Tim and I, who, by the way, years ago did the Shrink Wrap show, you know, which was dealing with relational issues and how we all impact one another and how we process.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. you know, it doesn't surprise me that's an element of our work, that there's this intersubjective context where Tim does something, I do something, he sees something, I see something, and then suddenly we see something new. Something new happens. And I think we're both very passionate about that process.
Well, and isn't that, in many ways, lichen on rocks is a metaphor for that anyway, because they're the agents of change, among the first agents of change in the environment, correct?
And they are collaborators.
Yeah.
They're inherent,
massive
they're
collaborators.
Biological collaborators. And that's what's so interesting about them. And this thing didn't really hit me till about a week ago. I mean, I've known intellectually all along, lichens are actually collaborative organisms. And I'll get into a little bit of that. But it suddenly hit me a week ago emotionally that the two are just perfectly parallel.
Mm-hmm.
So a lichen, generically a lichen, is usually a fungus and an algae working together. The fungus essentially builds a structure and invites the algae in. The algae lives inside the structure built by the fungus and photosynthesizes. So I build a house and my photosynthetic collaborator moves in and uses the protection I've provided to generate food for both of us. They're incredible organisms. They're really old. There's one lichen they estimate is 8,600 years old, a single individual. It's hard to really, but they aren't individuals. They're cooperatives. They're collaborators. And I actually met a lichenologist at Mountain Market. my wife chatted up this person, and I came in, I met her, and, oh, yeah, I study lichens on cliffs. And so we took this deep dive into lichen biology. But she said there are also these things called cyanobacteria, which are photosynthetic bacteria that also get into the mix. And in some cases, lichens are actually three organisms working together, and I bet there's more. And they form these, her take was each color is basically a different species. So when you see these pieces in the show, there are pieces with six or eight colors of lichens on a single bit of rock. Here they live everywhere because they're not constrained by moisture. Down in the desert, they're almost always restricted just to the north side of boulders. There are exceptions to that, but generally that's where you look for them in the desert. They can't take full exposure to sun. So they kind of hide out, and they're sneaking around and occupying these little microhabitats, but they're just spectacularly colored animals, creatures.
Well, in the Arctic, they're a significant source of food.
Yeah, for reindeer,
caribou, right?
I mean, reindeer moss, it's called. Mm-hmm. They aren't moss. There's nothing to do with moss about lichens. Lichens are these very odd organisms. I call them entities more, and they are perfect collaborators. They don't succeed unless everybody gives what they have to give, but also take what the partner offers.
I think that's what has made this such a joy for me, is that Tim is just such a great collaborator. You know, he's supportive and reactive in a really positive way. And I think that we kind of felt like all bets were off. We could just jump into each field and create whatever, and we're very accepting.
Yeah, and with no ego. It's like neither of us owns these things. They came out of this interaction between us. That's what's really magical about it. And you know, the objects that emerge from this are the evidence of it that people can go and see. But the more important part to me was this process of doing this, and this is just the beginning of us collaborating on artwork. I have no idea where it's going to go from here.
We can't stop.
Yeah, it's going to keep going. And there was a load of photos that got lost in the mail that didn't arrive. And I can't wait to get to those, because there's some really incredible ones there. There's a few in the show, but I found some petroglyphs, 2,000-year-old petroglyphs in the desert that were colonized by lichens.
Oh, cool.
And they're just like, that was, then I really started to get blown away, because here's this human, this ancient human artifact that's colonized by these lichens, and the microhabitat provided by the curves in the petroglyph were the habitat for certain lichens. And I realize I'm kind of babbling right now.
But you'd get patterns.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, yeah, so,
and the
colorful
lichens,
patterns.
The lichens are reinforcing the patterns created by humans thousands of years ago. In interesting contrast, I found a petroglyph made by a guy, J. and A. Tillman, September 30th, 1874, San Francisco, Cala. Now, that's what this guy chipped in the rock. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing was, well, that's only, you know, 150 years ago. The lichens hadn't yet colonized the chipped part. They were all around it. So he chipped probably through these lichen colonies, and they haven't yet gotten around to creeping down into the grooves he cut in the rock.
I'm thinking about the algae lichen connection, and I don't understand that. I thought algae was just in ponds and oceans.
Probably
and
the
places.
Only reason they're in the desert. I mean, you find them in ponds in the desert, because algae can go completely dormant, and they can form spores that can survive probably outer space. But
so they don't have to be wet.
No, they don't, and that's the point of getting together with a fungus, is the fungus can build this tough structure, and the things just sit there for years. I mean, it can be years between rainfall, and then the rain comes, and they get a whole bunch of biology done while they have that little bit of rain, and then they just go on pause. I mean, a lot of desert creatures do that, but these guys are just like, I think they can go indefinitely on pause.
We got it down to a science.
And so they're going to do really well in the relative to all these other organisms. If the climate change drought happens in the desert, which it appears to be doing, I would bet on the lichens to kind of cruise through.
Now, how long does it take you to do like a piece like the one we're looking at? Each of these pieces, you know, the time put into it.
A lot of time. I would say that each piece, like each what I'm calling lichen piece.
Which look like for those of you who can't see it, they're like a, I don't know.
50-cent piece, like the
and
two.
They really look like lichen, but they're made out of string.
What they're made out of, each piece has probably three different threads. Mm-hmm. Each thread is a compilation of a stainless steel or copper filament that is wrapped with silk. Each thread is probably finer than a strand of dental floss. And when I looked at these color splashes on these rocks that Tim sent me, I one thing I really wanted to replicate, I didn't want to replicate the way it looked entirely, but I wanted to get the color. And so to get the color and dimension, I would use three different color threads to combine. And then each knitted piece probably takes about a half hour at least between the thought and the manipulation of the curves and density, and that's just before it's even attached
and
to the piece.
Just to point out, as you look closer at what she's knitted, each one is a different color from every other one.
Yeah.
They're close, but it's different proportions of different colored threads.
Yeah.
And so visually, your eye doesn't ever just rest. If you look closely, and here's for people who come to the show, please look very closely at these pieces because there's a lot going on and there's a lot of hidden stuff that you will only get if you spend a little bit of time looking into it.
Oh, and there's a bone
in
there,
too. And there's a bone.
The bone was attached to the metal to bring this cut-off piece forward and separate from the other. It just happened to work, and we kind of like the lichen-y look of the end of the
bone. Robin, do you use teeny little knitting needles or do you use just your fingers?
I use a variety, you know, again, depending on whether I want the structure to have density or to be more lace-like, and then I'll change in between. I'm really obsessed with tuning in to each particular flap and curve of the structure. So I try my best to reflect it. I guess that comes from being a shrink and a sensitive person.
And I have no idea how she does any of this. And this is like the tamest version. There are knittings composed of LED lights, metal, and thread in the show. And the flashing LED lights.
Like those little LED lights
on the
copper. Yeah, I found
these very, very fine LED lights at Miles in different colors, and I thought, I have to knit those. So they're knitted into a couple of pieces.
I doubt there's ever been knitting like this.
Well, I am just sort of stunned that we've been talking about lichen for a half an
lichen
hour.
Lichen art for half hour.
and I want to thank you very, very much for coming in. We have Cassie and Ari. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Robin.
And the show again is at the Haynes Brewery. It'll be up. How long will it be?
For a month.
For a month.
Yeah.
So if your first Friday, you can only pause for a minute while you're running to the sidewalk chalk art contest. Know that they will be there for a month, and it may rain, and you could spend a lot of time sipping
and
looking
staring
very carefully at lichen.
It's kind of like Where's Waldo?
Yeah.
You know, what you'll discover within
Waldo
these pieces.
Waldo is everywhere, but you
right,
have
well,
to look carefully.
You. Very
thanks
much.
Thanks for having
Shields
us.
You,
and
Robin Grace and Tim Shields.
Collaborators
we're
on
gonna
lichen.
We're going to take a quick break,
art.
And we'll have Ari and Cassie Miller on to talk about their book.
Thanks.
Welcome back to Art Matters. We have
Cassie Miller
and Ari Marcourt in the studio here to talk about their book.
And they are another collaborative team. Cassie is the writer and Ari is the artist, and they will be signing their brand new beautiful book, Alaska Nursery Rhymes, Mother Moose. And I'll let you girls go ahead and introduce yourselves any way you'd like. Cassie, you can go first. If you don't want to, Ari can go.
Well, I'm Cassie, as Heather just said. I was the one that wrote the words for the book. And
And I'm Ari Marcourt, and I did the illustrations for Mother Moose.
So why don't you give us a description of the book?
So it's basically just a collection of classic nursery rhymes that we've changed the words to fit a little bit better to Alaskan themes, having Alaskan animals and illustrations, and it was a lot of fun.
So they're little poems, essentially.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Do you have off the top of your head a line that you particularly liked or something that comes?
I like we changed where has my little dog gone to where has the gray lynx gone. And so I like that one. That's one of my favorite, because instead of the ears so long and the tail so short, it's with legs so long and tail so short. So I like that one.
Yeah, I agree. That was my favorite one to draw. I think that was my first illustration, and I kind of went all out because Cassie really wanted like this magical theme, and I liked it because it like enhances what already is beautiful here and turns it into something magical, because it is really magical, the experience of looking at landscapes and animals here. It's like, it's very alive. So I kind of wanted to go with that. I wanted to make the colors pop out. And I really liked the poem to go with it.
Now, I've seen a peek of the illustrations with some of your online postings. and they look like, are they watercolors? Or
no, actually,
what are they?
This was my first time. And I actually did two art shows so far using the same medium, and it was actually using a stylus on this notepad. So it was all like kind of computer work, which was really difficult. I had never done anything like it, but it also provides this huge variety of colors and allows things to kind of pop out, which I really liked. So I wanted to get it just right. So I did lots and lots and lots of different like versions of each page, and I'd ask Cassie, like, do you like this? What about this one? Are you sure? It was fun, though. Yeah.
Now, how did you decide to collaborate on this? What was the beginning of this project?
So the beginning of this project was my son Corvus is obsessed with having people sing to him at night, and I got really tired of singing the same old nursery rhymes over and over and over again. So I started playing with words and changing them up, and sometimes he'd tell me they suck. Sometimes he liked them. 2-year-olds have no qualms with hurting your feelings. They don't think it's going to hurt your feelings. They're like, that was terrible,
no
Mom.
Filter.
What are you saying? But then I started coming up with ones that he actually liked, and other kids started to like too. So I started writing them down, and then I was like, oh, well, maybe if I could put some pictures with them. And I tried really hard. I really tried to draw them for myself, and I couldn't do it. And so I was looking through random people's arts online, and I found Ari's, and I was just really drawn to it and talked to her a little bit about whether or not she felt that she could achieve the style that I was looking for, and she said yes, and she definitely did that.
Oh. Now, so you two weren't friends before you started this as much? I mean, knew each other, but not
we knew each other
buddies,
from around
or
town.
Yeah,
but
we knew
never
each other.
Really hung out.
Yeah. Yeah, but it kind of worked out because we're both moms with little kids, and we kind of just got inspired, I think, by the same idea of having a children's book, and our own kids can, you know, look at the book, which is really cool. And just when she offered me the job, I was kind of just like, yes, I'll do it. Yeah.
So, Cassie,
always
you kind of sought Ari out to
yep.
Illustrate?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I saw your show at the brewery this winter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Now, so here's a question. When you then chose which nursery rhymes to rework, did you talk to Ari about which one she would like to illustrate more than others? I mean, did you sort of have a collaboration then about...
We definitely did. So what we did is I had a huge list of very hit and miss ones, and I was like, okay, well, we need this many, you pick which ones.
How
you
many
think.
Did you need?
we did 12 in the book.
I think 12.
So there's 12 different nursery rhymes in the book, so 12 illustrations. I think there was like close to 30 poems.
Yeah,
that we got
lot.
She got
I was
so
overwhelmed.
She's like, you said 12, right? I was like, yeah, 12. And so she sorted through and decided which ones she felt she could do and that she was drawn to and enjoyed and which ones she would like to put pictures with.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of then color schemes or anything like that, did you go back and forth with that, or did you just sort of
a
go
little
with
bit?
What?
A little bit, yeah. She wanted very like vibrant colors in the beginning.
Yeah, and pretty much every time she'd send one over, it was perfect. So I was like, well, I think this is working out really well.
I felt the opposite. I was like, I gotta change it. I gotta do something. I spent like hours just like looking at it, like, what did I do?
Now, in terms of publishing the book, you you've done this on your own, correct?
Yeah.
And so do you work with a designer or someone that helps you structure it, or is this all coming from your own talent and sensibilities?
So with Create Space, they have very strict rules of how they want everything formatted. And so you submit and resubmit and resubmit until
so
they say
Create
yes.
So Create Space is it's sort of a collaboration as well between you and a publisher, and
each
do different
it's
parts.
It's an Amazon company, and each time you submit, they'll be like, okay, well, this doesn't work. Fix it. And so you go back and you fix it, or try to. There was a lot of attempts.
And give us an example for those of us who weren't, like, what type of thing wouldn't work and what would,
if text was too close to either of the edges, if mm-hmm. the bleed on the image was wrong, if the spine wasn't the right spot for the outside of the book. There was a lot to it.
So
I
instead
had no
of having
idea.
Them fix it for you, they send it back to you to get
yes.
to them
yes.
before they will publish it. So
yes.
it's a pretty intense. You've learned a lot, not only about
yeah.
writing and illustrating a book, but also
formatting.
Publishing one.
Formatting. Yeah. Learned a lot about formatting.
Yeah, that's very challenging.
Yeah, that was, I think that, for me, that was the most difficult part, just getting that formatting right. It took a long time.
And then the format itself, you have a poem and then picture or page? Or?
The picture encompasses the whole spread, and then the text is worked through the image. Mm. So you get a big image of Ari's amazing work, and then you'll be able to find the text in there so that you can read the poem that goes along with it. But I really wanted to make it so it was interactive for kids, because I know most kids, they're not too worried about the words. It's the pictures that they really want. And so I wanted that to be really front and center in the book, so that kids were really drawn to it. And then the parents could read the words and the poem that goes with it. And then hopefully they enjoy the whole thing and just read it over and over like a lot of kids do with their favorite books.
Yeah, and that's really important for the kids to have the context for what the words, and if the words are following what the pictures are doing, then it's easier for them to associate, and especially for things they have context of, like things that are around here.
Yeah, for sure.
Moose and lynx and bears and...
Yeah.
Now, why
things.
Did you choose this particular route to go instead of a different one, or instead of even doing it by hand and printing? I don't know.
Or like the choosing Create Space, I guess.
Yeah.
Choosing
Create Space, it took a lot of research finding which self-publishing company.
And you wanted to self-publish and not try to go through traditional publishers.
I'm a little bit of a control freak. And I wanted to have the say on who is making the images and what the images really looked like. Because with children's books, once you get a publisher that wants your book, you don't get to say what the pictures
right.
look like. You don't get any say in the formatting, the layout, anything like that. All you do is you give them the words, you wait for your money to come in if your book sells. I really wanted a particular feel for the book and particular imaging. And so the Create Space was definitely a first choice for me, just because they had the sizes of books that we wanted, the overhead was less, and it went straight onto Amazon so that it could be purchased online, where these other ones, I forget their names, but you have to purchase the book, have the book on hand, and then you can set up your Amazon account and sell the book online that way. So it was, for us living rurally, it definitely made the most sense to go with Create Space.
But then now the Friday night signing is at the local bookstore,
yep.
So the Babbling Book here in Haines, and I'm assuming you'll probably have some over in Skagway at the News Depot, I hope, or in Juneau at Hearthside. Then do you do the distributing as well?
Yep.
So that's your...
Yep, we... So
it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but it's definitely really rewarding, and it leads to a lot of freedoms for us, mm-hmm. instead of things being put where we wouldn't really enjoy them being put, or just, I don't know.
I think that's great. I think that being able to have that control, which is definitely lost through a lot of larger publishing companies.
Yeah, I know. There's a really neat book about. It's called the Great Green Room, and it's a biography of Margaret Wise Brown, who wrote Goodnight Moon and The Runaway Bunny, and it's really interesting in the history of sort of children's publishing, because she was hired by the Little Golden Books when they started to write stories, and she was a writer and a poet, and to write the stories, and she was given, I think with each one she could use a certain number of words, and the same words, like you could use 20 words or 50 words, and that's the repetition, mm-hmm. that they were in collaboration with a teacher, I guess, to teach children how to read. And then she insisted that they have real artists doing the pieces, so like when you see Goodnight Moon, that's the illustrator for that was a contemporary artist that was popular, and that style is, you know, it's kind of arresting. Or to get Garth Williams, who did, you know, the illustrations for Charlotte's Web and Stuart Little, he's did some of those illustrations and the little bunnies and stuff that look cute. But it was interesting in reading that book how it was completely separate, the writing and the art and the layout, and it was really done by the publisher. They were working for the publisher, who had a way to go, and that she wasn't always pleased with how it worked, but was pleased with being treated seriously as a writer who had a real craft of working with very few words and appealing to children.
Mm-hmm, right.
And the illustrators were interested for that way too, but this is sort of the evolution now.
Yeah.
Coming to a point where you two have decided do it on your own and head out in the world. And that's the kind of the brave new world of publishing, which is really exciting.
Right.
And gives you that opportunity.
It is very exciting. And thank you, Cassie, for allowing me to do this. Because there's always that like fear, kind of, not really a fear, but that feeling like, oh, I really could do this, because I've been thinking about like, oh, I could do a children's book, I could do these other art projects. But then there's always that feeling like, oh, but, you know, I don't think I could really pull through with it. I'm not sure if I could really get a publisher. And it's always just taking that little extra step towards your goal, and you can actually just achieve it. It's really not that hard.
It's pretty.
It takes that, just getting over that little hump where you can actually start achieving things. And I'm starting to realize that, like, wow. So it's nice, because then I can like encourage others, like, hey, you can do this. Yeah.
And it's pretty exciting to hold a book in your hands that you've written and illustrated, isn't it?
It is. It was really funny, because we ordered our copies before it was even available on Amazon, and they didn't show up till long after other people were getting their copies in town. They're like, "Oh, have you? Your book is great." I was like, "I haven't seen it yet." I'm glad you like it.
I think we sold quite a few copies before I got my first one. I was like, "Oh, look, here it is."
Yeah, I do know from my own experience with my books that the Amazon connection, while it's obviously they're one of the largest bookseller in the world, I think, but the books that really take off are hand sold by small bookstore owners, independent bookstores, and it's amazing if you just, you know, down here, if somebody really likes it that's behind the counter, you'd be amazed how many copies they can sell. So I'd encourage you to search out the small stores in Alaska, because you're going to find they're your best friends in this. Especially, you know, someone comes in off a ship, or they come in to get a present and says, "Oh, you want this book? This is so great!" And you know, Ari and Cassie did this, and that's another kind of form of collaboration.
Yeah,
that the bigger online retailers don't really do for you.
Yeah, for sure. With the bookstore here in town, they had contacted me about how many books that they wanted for their order. And then a couple days later, they're like, "We've already sold them. They haven't. We haven't physically gotten the books yet, but we're gonna have to up that order. there's people asking for it and putting reserves on it. So we're going to have to up that order a little bit. Hopefully you have enough coming.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's really exciting. And that's just something to remember when you're doing all these things. So do you have another book in mind? Are you going to collaborate on the next one already? Have you thought about that?
I do have other text I haven't talked to Ari about yet. So you guys are kind of putting me on the under the gun here now, just sitting right there. I don't know what to do now.
Well, at least you're not saying no, never again.
No, never. Definitely. I would love to work with Ari again. She's fantastic.
I even had a couple books in mind, too. I was like, wow, I really enjoyed illustrating. Because, like, even after the book was done, I was like, man, I kind of want to go back and, like, do a couple more things. Could we change some things? I just love to keep working. Like, once I got in that role of, like, doing each illustration, which I spent, like, hours and hours on, I just wanted to keep going. So,
you know, what's the difference, Ari, between the art that you do as an illustration versus, you know, the other kind of art you do? What's the process, and what are you thinking of in terms of the goal for the image?
I feel like the goal would be that I'm actually providing an image for, like, children and people who want to, like, get the vision of the writing. So it's, like, it's completely different to me, because the art that I do is kind of just for fun for me. I never think, oh, I'm going to sell this and this is going to be amazing. And, you know, it's always just kind of like, wow, that person has a beautiful face. I want to draw it, you know, and that's what I usually do. I just love to draw faces, but this was completely different. This was, you know, there was text involved. I had to create a vision, you know, out of nothing, which was kind of, you know, a challenge in its own. And then I also had to create animals who had expressions. And it's like, okay, I got to give these animals expressions, but not make them look creepy. And that was actually very difficult. I was like, wow. That, you know, when you see, like, these Alaskan, like, kind of, like, touristy books, and you see, like, moose with smiles, that's really hard to do. Like, I show a lot of respect for those people without making the moose look creepy or, like, weird, you know? I had to do it over and over. The characters were really fun. And also just drawing wildlife in general. I had never drawn, you know, like, certain animals in the book ever in my life. It was the very first time. So that was also a difficult thing to do, but it also made me more appreciative, you know, of, like, wow, all this wildlife. And it was a lot of fun. It was a healthy challenge. Yeah.
Can you describe your favorite illustration, if you have one?
My favorite one, I think, was the lynx. I think that's the one.
So
where
the same
I got
one, you're full coming circle. Right.
Yeah,
back.
No, the lynx one was my favorite. And I just got very inspired. The other one was, I think, the Baba doll sheep. Baba doll sheep, have you any wool? Yes, sir, three bags full. That one, there's a little squirrel, and then there's a doll sheep, and he has, like, these bags of, like, wool in the background, and then there's the scenery, and they're on top of, like, this mountain. That one took a lot of vision. I was like, okay, it's going to be a mountain. I'm on top of a mountain. And then there's a doll sheep, you know, and it was fun, though. I really enjoyed it. And then I had to put little clothing on the squirrel. It's like, OK, what would a squirrel wear? Here I am, like, off in, like, dreamland.
Now, you described earlier, and I you'll have to forgive me because I'm not as familiar with that type of art, but the stylus and the
stylus and it's called the
tell me about this. Tell us about
okay,
this.
Okay, so the stylus is just kind of a touch sensor for drawing, kind of like when you're swiping on your phone. Mm-hmm. So it's the same touch sensation thing where you can actually draw with your finger. If you're on, like, a certain app, you can draw with your finger. This would be with a pen, you know, for your phone or whatever. I used a touchpad. And I connected it to my computer, and then I had a sketchbook app on my computer, and I was able to draw on a small little, like, platform, kind of like on the screen, and I could zoom in, zoom out, and it was really hard to do because sometimes I would like zoom out and I'd scribble all over everything, like on accident, because I'm trying to zoom in, and then I'm no, and I had to go like undo over and over.
So it's a whole nother way to do your art.
Yeah, and then the pressure is very different from when you're using a pencil, so you have to push down kind of hard, and now like my pad is all scratched up because I spent hours just like pushing down super hard with my pen. And then there's a slight delay when you're drawing a line. It's not like a normal line on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. It's slightly off because it's picking up all those pixels just slightly off from where you're pushing down. And it's very unique. It's a very unique style to use.
Is this was the better way to get the images to the publisher, or was this just a choice that you guys made?
This is my choice.
Really?
Because I had a 1-year-old at the time, and she did not like it when I had paint out. She just wanted to get into all the paint, everything I had. So it'd be like late at night, and I could just pull out my computer and start drawing like immediately, uh-huh. and I just kind of draw into the night.
And then it
like,
would be clean up without doing anything.
Exactly, and I'd have all these colors I could use. I also really enjoyed like doing something completely different. Like mm-hmm. it kind of
learning a new medium
inspired me to do something more than what I could normally do. Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you both very much for coming in. I know it's going to be a big hit. I think you're going to have to order more.
Yeah, already if the bookstore sold out before
they're going to sell out like in the first half hour on Friday night, and enjoy signing them.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to hearing about the next collaboration as well. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for coming in today.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Ari. Thanks, Cassie.
Authors. And illustrator Cassie Miller and Ari Marquardt. And their brand new book is Alaskan Nursery Rhymes, Mother Moose. And they'll be assigning at the Babbling Bookstore in Haines on First Friday.
Thank you.
All right, Marley. Yeah, well, we're kind of at the end now. Do we have any more? We have a few minutes over quick First Friday stuff. Anything you want to highlight, or should I just run right through it again here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, okay. I think the highlights would be the brewery and the bookstore where we've had our guests.
Uh-huh. We also have another book signing. It's a lot of writing this time because Dan Henry will be with Across Shaman's River, and he will be signing that at the Pilot, the Alpenglow or the Pilot Light? Alpenglow.
Yeah.
No.
No, that's at the Pilot Light. Wait. Yeah.
Yes, Dan will be signing at the Pilot Light. I know, it's the same people. It's just moved in. So Dan will be over here in Fort Seward at the Pilot Light because the bookstore is going to be plugged with Cassie and Ari's fans. And the Magpie has music. They've got Nora and Matilda. So that's lovely. Wild Things at the Sheldon Museum, and also the spirit of John Muir, the John Muir impersonator, who will be performing at the Chilcat Center on Saturday night. At six. That correct?
Yeah, doors open at 5:30. Yep.
Alaska Rods also has Emma Barr, a White Horse artist in the style of the Canadian Group of Seven, so a traditional Canadian artist will be at Alaska Rods. Double Shovel Farm will be at Lynn View Mercantile with the Flash Green Market. Art on Main Street is Yuko Hayes. From her first year of school, we heard about her on the last show. La Loft has a sidebook sale, Second Nature with Mark Kazi's shop, which is also a good one to go in right now if you're out and about foraging at that time of year.
Yeah.
He's got all kinds of stuff for picking berries.
And homebrewing now has expanded his homebrewing section.
Gathering mushrooms, some of those things. You could probably learn about lichen there too. Ampersand, cards, tricks, and parlor games. It's open mic night at the Pioneer Bar. Rusty Compass and Alpenglow are doing the sidewalk art, and Alpenglow is also opening their new little garden.
Yeah, that their, space
their
there in between.
Outside space. So, and so there's just a lot. Oh, and over at the distillery, Merrick Bocart and Wayne Price will be carving that. It's a huge totem.
Yeah.
It's on the porch up there at the Silver Cloud, the big house in the middle at Fort Seward where the canoes are. I saw it last week. It's a beautiful piece of art, and it's more than a piece of art. It's a totem that is in recognition of domestic abuse, and I think it's for the Aware Shelter.
Okay.
In Juneau. It's a great big hunk of cedar, and Wayne's been working on it a lot, and it's really cool.
Yeah, so I like that there's a lot more going on at the Fort Seward now, like with the Pilot Light and at the Silver Cloud.
Yes. So there you have it. It's another First Friday in Haines, and thanks also, as always, to Carol Tyman and the Arts Confluence for kickstarting this thing. And if you're in doubt about what is where and there's just too much, just look for the cool First Friday street signs that are all around town in front of the different venues. And I did want to let Skagwegians know that we haven't forgotten about you, and we've tried to get some activity on the last couple shows, but everybody is so busy over there that we're going to have to wait till it calms down a little bit.
And you know what? You know why they're so busy? They're busy getting ready for our At Your Service auction.
Oh, way to go, Marley. I knew you would bring that in. So that's, when is that? Tonight?
That's tonight. That's
tonight? Thursday? What, to Thursday night?
Yeah, Thursday.
Oh,
August 2nd.
Quick,
my
say
birthday.
Something. Oh, it's your birthday, Marley?
It's my birthday.
We went through the whole show and you didn't tell us?
Well,
oh my gosh.
Anyone who's listening to the community calendar would already know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm busted. Okay.
well, yes, at the Red Onion tonight at 7, At Your Service auction. It's a big auction that's actually been going on in Skagway for
Marley,
a long time.
I remember when you were born.
Oh, isn't that incredible?
Oh, happy birthday, Marley. All right.
So everyone in Skagway, go check out the Red Onion tonight. Deb Potter will be your auctioneer, and lots of really great prizes and things to auction off tonight.
Oh, man, the kids are growing up.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Heather, for another great Art Matters. I guess we'll be back October.
Yeah, I'm going to miss September. I'm going to be floating down the Conga Cut River.
Oh, yeah.
So
catch a lot of grayling.
Wish me luck. I hope I come back.
Oh, yeah. You'll have a lot of fun with Bart and Pat. It's going to be great.
Yes.
Well, thanks, everyone, again, for tuning in to Art Matters. We'll be back in October. And next up, we'll have the World Cafe.